You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Thank you for tuning in for this Unity Partner Program. Unity Online Radio partners with spiritual leaders from organizations whose mission and messages complement Unity's. We are pleased to bring you this program on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
For joining us for the Michael Chatman Giving Show. Each week, Michael will highlight the joy of giving, as well as shed light on some of today's humanitarian heroes and donors in both the private and corporate sectors. Michael will show you why giving of yourself is truly the best gift you can receive.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Michael Chatman Giving Show. I'm so excited about today's guest. Ian Adair is the founder and principal of an organization called Strategy 27 LLC. It specializes in working with nonprofit organizations in the area of fundraising. More specifically, he's come up with a unique brand of working with donors and financial contributors to nonprofit organizations called Attention Focused. And I'm just really fascinated to learn a little bit more about attention-focused fundraising. So welcome to the show, Ian.
Thank you so much for having me on, Michael. It's a lot of fun to reconnect with you at the Giving Show.
Oh, good. Well, tell our audience a little bit about your experience in the philanthropic sector and what led you to create this new concept in fundraising called attention-focused fundraising.
Okay. I've had, a lifetime of really having the opportunity to meet some amazing people that helped me grow up. I grew up in a single family home, very much below the poverty level. And we had so many people reach out to us and were so generous and so kind and so giving. And so while I was kind of trying to choose what my path was going to be in college for later on in life, I had an opportunity to be involved in an internship that really set me on a path to wanting to live a life of service. And so from there, it just kind of grew exponentially in philanthropy. I had an amazing career in different areas all over the country with Boys and Girls Club of America. And I loved working with youth. I loved working with young people and especially helping them kind of make those critical decisions that I had to make at a really, you know, pivotal point in their life. And so, you know, early on throughout my career, I've always kind of looked back on how that opportunity grew for me. And philanthropy is a way of life once you kind of take on that path. And so that's kind of been my philanthropic journey. And through those opportunities, I got very heavily involved with development and fundraising and marketing for organizations because that was the best way I could utilize, you know, my attributes and my skills to help those organizations grow and have a lasting impact in those communities. And so it's been an amazing career so far, and I'm looking forward to another 20 more years. But to get to your next question about, you know, what kind of led me to this new concept, I think anytime anyone's looking to create something new, it kind of stems out of a dissatisfaction with something old. So I was really looking at certain aspects of the job of fundraising that I wasn't quite satisfied with how successful Prospect Research was, with low donor retention for the organization, with low donor engagement. And I really started noticing, Michael, that donors were turning away from traditional communication methods and starting to really focus their attention on emerging digital communication outlets and social media platforms. So I kind of, from that recognition, started to realize I knew there was a better approach needed to win back donor attention.
Mm. Now, you phrased the whole concept of fundraising in a way in which I really haven't heard any other consulting coach speaker on this subject before. And what you talk about is that fundraising is now about the supply and demand of donor attention and where the attention is the commodity and the donor time is the currency nonprofits need to survive. Can you define that more?
Yes, it comes down to, you know, we live in a 24/7, 365 information overloaded world where attention is just at a premium today and before any organization. And there's so many of them. I think over 1.5, 1.6 million nonprofits just in this country. Before any of them can tell you or share their mission or their incredible programs or the populations they're serving, before any of that can happen, and well before they can ask you for money, they need to get your attention.
Right, right. And so what are some of the strategies and pillars behind this concept of how a nonprofit can accomplish that?
I think the pillars are all set up to really focus on people's time, because people's time is at a premium. So when you know time is at a premium and you know you're battling everything in somebody's life, you have to put a strategy or several strategies together to find out how you can win that attention back. And so there's really four pillars, and I'll just briefly run through them. I think the first is, I think nonprofits have to realize that they are doing so many great things out there, they have to learn to share those great things. So I always say that I think a nonprofit organization has to learn to become a media company. And what I mean by that is they have to start creating and sharing things with their audience, not just telling them how great they are, but really sharing and documenting the journey of the programs that they're doing and how they're enacting their missions. And when I say create content, I think they should create content with one goal in mind, and that's to provide value to the audience. The second strategy is you got to have a mobile strategy. We are a mobile-dominated society today. The mobile phone has quickly replaced the television, and the laptop is the number one device that people use. And if you don't have a mobile strategy, you're really putting yourself really behind the times in how donors are receiving their information. So you've got to make sure that, you know, what are you doing to really make sure that you're hitting people where they're giving their attention. They're giving their attention to mobile, so you need to start putting some strategy into having a mobile strategy to make sure that you're there to try to garner that attention from them. The third strategy is just create attention-grabbing content and understand that we just can't create a three-minute organizational video anymore and email blast it out there or just put it on our website and think that's enough for people to understand what it is we do. We have to really put our leadership out front and focus on our leaders, get them in stories and get them in, you know, some pictures with some quotes behind them so people can start building a relationship with them, whether it's our board, whether it's our senior staff, whether it's our CEO of our organization. But create content in a way that's bite-sized, micro content for people to look at, you know, be able to really drink in right away and then be able to move on to the next thing, because that's what they're going to do anyway. So really understand that attention-grabbing content is what works. Colorful graphics, infographics, memes, short videos, those things work because people like to click through those. And the last strategy is build a community around your content. I have talked to so many organizations, Michael, that tell me they've tried social media, tried digital media, and I've looked at what they've done. And all I'll see is push messages, and those are just messages that basically talk about what the organization is doing. Or they'll tweet 50 times about a gala or an auction, but they won't engage the community that's already sponsoring that event. They won't recognize donors or volunteers that are going to be a part of that event. So you really have to start creating back and forth on these platforms, because that's what builds trust, and that's what promotes the transparency of the organization, and that's what wins donor attention.
You know, a word that rhymes with attention is retention, and I've heard you talk a lot about this too. It's once you get the attention and the donor gives to your organization, now the clock is ticking to try to retain that. And for as long as I've known you, Ian, I know you've talked a lot in this space to nonprofits about just the importance of donor retention. Why are so many nonprofits struggling to keep their donors, and specifically even having a harder time retaining those that make a first-time gift?
Right. Donor retention right now. I think the nonprofit sector is in a donor retention crisis. I think it's all that's talked about with the research out there. And I know people are really trying to find different ways to address this. And I think I look at this. Donors look at their giving as investment, not as donation. And just like investments we make in our own world, whether it's with a stock or whether it's just an organization or a startup, we want to see, you know, where that money's going, how that money's being used. You know, we want to see our leadership out front explaining, you know, successes that are going on. If not successes, you know, telling us about maybe something that went wrong, but owning that and then telling us how they're going to forge ahead. And that's what donors want to see. And without a doubt, donors today have a very different expectation of what they want to see from their nonprofit leadership. They want to see transparency. They are very much expect to be communicated in a more impactful way of what their giving is doing for that organization. Organizations need to be willing to listen to their donors, you know, and open their doors up more frequently and see what's kind of going on in the building or, you know, in an organization and really feel like they're a part of it. And they really want to feel that leadership steps out front more. You know, these are all things that are very different than 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, where organizations weren't really expected to do those things. And I think one of the biggest reasons why expectations have changed is because now we have such an abundance of choice. And if you feel that an organization hasn't recognized you properly or hasn't explained where your money's gone, and you start seeing them on your social media, your Facebook page, a good friend of yours is sending you something about how they were recognized by their organization or how they volunteered with an organization, you're competing with that. And there's so much choice out there. And when there is that much choice and that many more people in your network sharing all the good things happening to them and their and the organization that they give to, it makes it easier for the donor to leave. And I think that is what's really caused the retention issues that we're having today.
Yeah, and that's very profound what you shared. So I guess the lead into my next question would be, if I were to ask you to give our audience, our listeners, three tactical things or action items that fundraisers can do today to get started using this new attention-focused approach, what would you offer up?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. When you talk about a new approach like this, you know, new approaches require change, and change is always hard. I think one of the funniest things I ever heard at a nonprofit conference, somebody said, you know, who's excited about all the change happening right now in our sector? And everyone cheered and raised their hand. And the next question was, okay, who's ready to change today? And nobody raised their hand.
Right.
So, you know, so when I've tried to put together tactical, you know, actionable things you can do, you know, tomorrow or later today, you know, you have to really kind of spell out for folks, you know, how easy this can be to get you on the road to figuring out, you know, which of these tactics is best for you and how to best prototype and use them for your organization. So I always say the three things that I always like to start with are make sure your website is optimized for mobile. I think the research that I've seen is anywhere between 60-80% of nonprofit websites are not mobile friendly. And when you hear the word optimize, that's just, you know, a really fancy word for saying, is our current website designed and formatted to be read on a smaller device? That's all that means.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't know if that's true or not, you know, I would suggest that all, you know, folks in the nonprofit sector that are listening, you know, just go ahead and Google your own site, pull it up, and see how it looks on your phone or see how it looks on your iPad. And if it looks funny and if it's difficult to, you know, maneuver around and learn about the organization, and if it's impossible to even want to donate to an organization because of you have to click so many things just to find that information, well, then you know right then and there that you need to get something done today to make sure your site is optimized for mobile use. So that's the first thing I always say is, and I use it as the first thing because it helps with one of the strategies, and that's start putting a mobile strategy together, and that's the very first thing you'd want to do. The second thing is stop treating social media only as a distribution channel. And I know you've seen this with you know, the influencer that you are in philanthropy, mm-hmm. on social, that so many people will tweet anybody with any following and say, hey, Michael Chapman, hey, Ian Adair, hey, whoever, mm-hmm. can you please retweet this, or can you please
right.
retweet this? And it's just distribution. And you'll go to that site because a lot of times it's something really impactful or something really heartfelt, and you want to help them. And you go to that site, and it's just 100 tweets of the same thing with somebody else's name in place of yours, and you have no idea what it is they're really doing. There's no video explaining it. There's no story linked to it. So you'd really know where your money would go. And although it sounds great, you know, in 140 characters, you're kind of left wondering, okay, I haven't really built up enough trust with this person because all I see are these push messages again. So really start treating your social for a number of different ways. And this tactical piece of advice really correlates to one of the strategies, and that's create a community around your content. Spend a day. I challenge every person in nonprofit development, just spend a day just showing gratitude on social. Don't ask for anything. Don't link to anything. Don't try to share something that's coming up. Just go out there and spend just a day or a week just thanking the volunteers, the donors, the staff, the board, and really create a community around that information, and not just look at it as I'm just going to distribute everything on every channel and it's all going to look the exact same. So really, that's my second piece of advice. Just stop treating social media as distribution only.
Okay, go ahead. Get the third one.
I was going to say the third one is just research where to find, you know, what social platforms your target audience is attention is at, and go add value there. A lot of people ask me all the time, Ian, this attention-focused fundraising thing sounds really great. Can you tell me where my audience's attention is? Like, well, that piece of the puzzle is on you. You have to spend a little bit of time, you know, going to your donors and saying, how best do you like to be contacted or like to be reached? Or what format do you like to get information about the organization? That requires some time. That requires some legwork. And utilize the opportunities that you have, whether it's at an event or whether it's in an email blast or whether it's in a newsletter, to really sit down and figure out, you know, where your donor's attention is, so you can go on those channels and platform and really kind of try to win it there.
You know, Ian, you know that I've gone back in-house now serving as a president of a community foundation. It's a small community foundation, and we interface a lot with our grantees who are still trying to build capacity in their organizations. Many of them are 1, 2, 3 employee operations. The revenues that are flowing through these different organizations are modest at best. And so from a capacity building standpoint, what advice, because it's one thing to say you're talking to a United Way or Habitat for Humanity, but if you're dealing with a smaller charity that's probably having revenues of around $100,000 to $200,000, if that, and they maybe do one signature event and have a few donors, any advice for those smaller charities of how they might, or is this new method that you've created applicable to those small charities, or what other advice would you have for those size charities?
I think I really had small to mid-sized groups in mind when I came up with it, because that's where my background comes from.
Okay.
I think a lot of consultants had opportunities in larger development offices. Not a lot of them had opportunities leading organizations. And so that's where I really like to really talk to the small development shop folks. I mean, I was an executive director of two organizations where I was also the chief development officer. So
yeah.
I know the stresses and the hats so many small nonprofit organizations have. And I would say this is an opportunity for you to really own certain things that I think larger organizations cannot do. You can really own in your community how well you steward your donors. You can own that. And I think today, as we look at the resources that it took to put something out on digital, you know, 5, 10 years ago, we were always trying to find a photographer, a digital camera crew. I think everyone today has a mobile office in their pocket, and that's their phone. And we've looked at what donors crave, and they crave authenticity. They crave genuine appreciation. And you can shoot a short video on your phone showing that, really documenting. Don't always think you have to create something so perfect and so special. I always say document over create, because it's that documentation piece is what really draws people in. And if you can, you know, focus on recognizing those that have done so much for you, or really sharing that appreciation that has meant so much to your organization to help it do the good work it's doing. As a small organization, you can really own that today really easily, just by playing with your phone for a little bit and then going on social media where there's no barrier to entry and just owning it outright.
Yeah. When you look at the different buckets, and what I mean by buckets, the different revenue streams that a nonprofit can partake in, from planned giving to major gives, annual giving, all of that. What is the area that you believe most nonprofits are blowing it? Is it their approach to major gives? Is it their annual giving campaign? Is it their direct mail? Where they seem to be struggling the most?
I think the struggle the most is in getting monthly donors. People that give monthly and not just once a year. I think when you give once a year, you're putting yourself at risk to really have a retention problem. It's the retention in terms of monthly donors is far less than it is for once a year donors, because people who give monthly are usually more invested in the organization. Mm-hmm. So I think nonprofits are having a real trouble with their annual campaigns, because they're not sharing enough of where that money goes and the impact that money is having. I think they do a really good job with that with major gifts. I think they do a really good job of that in capital campaigns. And we always see probably the best video or the best story or the most heartfelt story at a live event, a special event, than we do in those annual campaign offerings. And I think the other area that organizations are stumbling with is planned giving. I think we are about to enter the golden age of planned giving over the next 7 to 10 years, because we've seen just all those folks that weren't able to retire kind of post-recession are all starting to retire in the last year or so and over the next 5 to 7 years. And we're looking at an opportunity that group was our mainstay group that we fundraise from. That group is the one that was the most engaged group with our organization, the most volunteer hours. And so now we have this incredibly engaged group. How are we going to then kind of scaffold them to the next level of giving? And that's planned gifts. And I think you have to have a planned gift strategy in place today to be able to take advantage of what's going to be an incredible area of planned giving over the next 7 to 10 years.
Now, I want to transition with that as you talk about planned giving, because so many of the grantees that we work with, because they are small, so busy keeping the lights on, trying to raise money to meet budget every year, and they never get to it. But you do have maybe an executive director that's somewhat innovative and forward-thinking, or a director of development who says, I would love to be able to engage my board around this conversation, but they just don't get it. Any hope or inspiration or practical advice for those organizations who know they need to focus on it, but they're not?
I think it just takes that one person to say yes, and it probably will come from your board, or it could even come from your leadership. Because I know when I was an organizational leader, I mean, in all honesty, I have much more value to the organization not around than I was when I was around, because, you know, in my life insurance or my will, I can leave them a bigger check than I can do, you know, today. And I think once you start explaining planned giving and legacy giving and what people can do to make it a lasting impact, you just got to find one or two people and then share that story. Let their story be what motivates everybody else, because a development officer in a small shop can only do so much. They can only talk about it in the statistics, but they really need somebody on that board to say, you know what, I'm able to do so much each year, but understanding the importance of planned giving, understanding the importance of securing the future of our organization, this is what I can do and leaving a lasting gift in my will, and this is why I'm doing it. And it's that story that's going to motivate others to give. And like I said, it always just takes one. I've talked to some of the organizations that say they plead with their board, they plead with their development committee, and they're always trying to pitch this planned giving thing as something the group needs to do together. And I think it's just like an amazing domino piece that, you know, once you get one going, the rest will start looking at it from a different perspective, because you need that different perspective to motivate others.
Right. Yeah. We have about 2.5 minutes or so, roughly about 2 minutes in the show. I'll spit it with you. Anything that you want to talk about just in the overall sector about where things might be going?
I really think it's understanding the value of attention and the importance of attention is what I want people to understand where I'm coming from. And I'm just starting to see that word used a little bit more in the last couple of months than I've ever heard it before, ever. And I think once nonprofits start understanding that you can't just assume that because you're doing great work and because you have great programs, that you deserve your donors' attention or their time or their money, because believe it or not, relationship and establishing trust and transparency are at the foremost of what they're thinking. And so you have to understand the power of attention and what it actually means to a donor.
Wow. Well, we've been talking today with Ian Adair, who is the founding principal of an organization called Strategy 27 based in Florida. And he specializes in working with nonprofit organizations that want to go to that next level of fundraising and fund development. And I just really, really thank you so much today, Ian, for being on the show and sharing your expertise with our listeners.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Michael. I've enjoyed the Giving Show since the beginning, and I enjoy every Tuesday night being a part of Why I Give Movement as well.
Well, thank you. So if you're listening, you heard Ian, he gave me an endorsement to go ahead and participate every Tuesday night on Twitter at hashtag Why I Give. See you next week on the Michael Chapman Giving Show.
Thank you for listening to the Michael Chapman Giving Show. Join Michael at 11 a.m. Central on Thursdays as he helps you uncover the joys of giving, featuring today's best-known philanthropists, private donors, public foundations, and a host of others. To give really is to receive.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
Peace in the presence of conflict. Love in the presence of hatred. Forgiveness in the presence of injury. These words are easy to say. It's challenging, though, to live them in everyday life. After all, I can make my words and actions peaceful, but I have no control over the words and actions of others. That's true, but think about it. If you, then I, then others, one by one, responded in love in every situation, the effect would be like the wave you see spread across a sports stadium. It would go on and on, gaining momentum as it moved through the people around us. I can let peace begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.